Some are virgin, others are extra virgin, the rest are not very virgin at all. It's difficult to tell which is which when shopping the sublime and scandalous world of olive oil, and so today we pause to ask, how can we find a real extra virgin?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 758th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Firenze who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer, our very own, Miss Idaho, Nikki James, on the boards.
Good morning.
Folks, the world has fallen head over heels in love with olive oil, but all that love has not been good for the oil. As Tom Mueller writes in his book Extra Virginity, too much love kills, even more than it hatred. Our reaction to it's totally visceral. Oil belongs to the most sacred things, which are paradoxically the first things we vilify. Grease the palm, oil the works. Oil has become a synonym for corruption. End quote. When Minnesota epidemiologist Ansel Keys, he the developer of World War II's K rations, concluded from his post-war seven countries study that the consumption of monounsaturated fats in olive oil led to fewer heart attacks, the olive oil industry of the Mediterranean blossomed into a worldwide enterprise. However, there was not, and probably is not, enough of the good oil, the extra virgin oil, to go around. Therefore, that extra virgin olive oil we purchased may actually be only a virgin, or a downright floozy. And worse yet, it may not be olive oil at all. It is difficult to tell which is which when shopping the sublime and scandalous world of olive oil, and so today we ask, how can we find a real extra virgin? Here to help us find the way, we have, from the Tuscany, Tom Mueller, author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and Scandalous World of Olive Oil. Tom, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much.
Glad to have you aboard. You're launching a book tour with your new book, Extra Virginity, right here in the Food Chain's home port of Santa Cruz, California. And glad to have you in town. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, it's really fun, yeah.
Okay, well, let's get right to the real crux of the issue and define some terms here that are kind of really hard to come to grips with when it gets right down to it. It seems to me like that there are four kinds of olive oils: extra virgin, virgin, not virgin at all, which we might call floozy, or fa, or fake olive oil. True?
That's right, and extra virgin is essentially the only one you need to know about.
Can you just give us a thumbnail description of these four different kinds of things so that as we go through the program, we'll have an understanding of them and we can further define the terms as we go along. But I'd like to get a handle on them right off the bat here.
Okay. Well, extra virgin, the legal definition is virgin oils are oils made with physical means, so crushing the olives and spinning out or pressing the oil. You can't use heat. You can't use chemistry. Just physical means. And extra virgin is the highest grade of the quality grade of the three virgin oils. But in the breakdown that you gave, extra virgin is a term that's used for a great number of substances that quite often don't meet that basic definition. So you have fine extra virgin olive oil, which is fresh squeezed fruit juice. Essentially, it's from fruit that was taken ripe from the trees, not too ripe, quickly pressed in the mill, crushed in the mill, I should say, and turned into oil, and then stored properly under nitrogen in cool conditions.
When you say turned into oil, was it actually turned into oil, or was it?
Well, the process is you crush the fruit with typically now a stainless steel grinder or hammer mill, sometimes still the old-fashioned grindstones, but the stainless steel is taking over, and it's fortunate that it is. Then the paste that you have is stirred for a while to make the little teeny micro droplets of olive oil coalesce into bigger droplets that are easier to extract. And then one or two things can happen. Typically nowadays, that paste, that stirred paste is put into a centrifuge, a great big thing that looks like a jet engine that spins very fast. And the different weights of water and the oil and the solid particles separate out, and you can separate the oil from everything else.
Okay.
In the olden days and up until, well, the 60s, and really today in certain parts of the Mediterranean, they used to use presses instead of centrifuges. They'd take that paste with the oil that had coalesced, slather it onto great big circular mats, pile those mats up, and then use hydraulic press after the Industrial Revolution and good old-fashioned horsepower before to squash those mats, and the oil would run out the bottom. But today, really, centrifuges are the way to go, and the vast majority of oil is made with centrifuges. And in fact, when you think about first cold press, one of the tried and true marketing terms that's used, so that's really a series of three misnomers in one. It's first in olive oil. It has to be first pressed for extra virgin olive oil, or it wouldn't be extra virgin. Cold, it can't be cold because you can't get oil out of cold olives. And pressed, well, you use a centrifuge anyway, not a press. So that gives you a little sense of
where we're headed here.
Exactly.
Help us a little bit with the difference between extra virgin and virgin then.
Well, the legal definition, and it's not surprising that the law, both in Europe and now in the U.S. and in Australia and other places, has occupied itself quite carefully with olive oil because of the prevalence of fraud. And the legal definition says, well, it has to match certain chemical parameters that indicate freshness, basically,
mm-hmm.
and that it has to have certain – it has to remind you of fresh olives and not taste bad. It's an odd kind of definition. It's kind of a negative definition. It doesn't stink, essentially. It's not a very high bar. But extra virgin says there can be no taste flaws whatsoever. Virgin oil can have a moderately more taste flaws or moderately less attractive chemical parameters. And then there's lampante, which is literally lamp oil in Italian, and that's not even legal for sale as food. It can only be sold as fuel.
Okay, good. And then floozy, fake olive oil.
So, well, that would be lampante. That would be something that you really shouldn't sell as olive oil, but that's been doctored one way or another. Quite often the technique is deodorization, which is a fancy way of saying, it's a refining process, a low-temperature refining process that removes the bad smells and bad tastes, also, unfortunately, good smells and the good tastes, and many of the nutritional value of the oil. And then you have a really dumbed down, completely kind of inert oil that needs to be goosed with a little bit of real extra virgin to give it some character. And that's sold as extra virgin. Well, that's illegal.
Okay.
As we said, extra virgin oil can only be physical means, and deodorization is by no means a physical mean. It's changing the chemical composition of that oil. So
okay.
That's
and,
a fluzy.
And then
right
there's
on.
The faux or fake oil, fake olive
mm-hmm.
oil. So is there actually...
Well, in my book, I detail some folks who, some of whom in Los Angeles, some of whom elsewhere, who are taking various vegetable oils, soybean oil, seed oil, and others, and coloring them with strange substances and flavoring them with secret substances and stirring them up in a big vat and selling the result as extra virgin olive oil, quite often to big food companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not even, those oils have never even been in the same room as an olive.
Okay, good. Well, there it is. There are four
definitions. I don't know how good that is, but it's true.
those are four definitions, and we have extra virgin olive oil. We have virgin olive oil. We have not virgin olive oil, or what I would call floozy oil, and we have faux or fake oil. Let's go start with the history of olive oil and try to find out why on earth we're so fascinated with this stuff in the first place. While on the island of Cyprus, I came to... this amazing, I was walking along a ridge helping some people with an ag project, and we came around a corner, and there across a little arroyo was an entire village of Cypriots had turned out to harvest grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, it was just like going back into biblical times. And,
mm-hmm.
and in your book, Extra Virginity, I read this wonderful account of someplace along on the island of Cyprus. They uncovered a very ancient olive oil factory, an industry, actually, that they turned
right.
up. Would you describe that a little bit?
Sure, and it illustrates beautifully how central olive oil was to the ancient world, not only as food, but as fuel and lubricant for for skin products and everything else. Yeah, this is a site that was discovered 15 years ago on the island of Cyprus that was a basically Silicon Valley of the ancient world. It was a very large factory in which different workers in different rooms were making perfumes from local products. Blacksmiths were forging swords and hammers and axes. There were weavers who were working at looms to make fancy, beautiful cloth and so on. There was a temple on site. And all of these things, and smack in the middle of this large industrial site, the archaeologists found an olive mill, and they couldn't make heads or tails of it. What did this olive mill have to do with these, you know, heavy-duty industrial processes? And gradually they began to realize, using tests on the various potsherds and tools that they found in the different areas, that olive oil was the common denominator of all these things. They were using the olive oil as a base for the perfumes in the perfume shop. They were using it as a fuel in the foundry. It's actually a remarkably good fuel, biofuel. It burns hot as benzene, and it has 30% more calories than petroleum. Using it as a lubricant for the looms and to treat the cloth. They were even offering large jars of olive oil to the god in the temple.
And that's the foundation of early civilization. And when we come back, we're going to ask Tom Mueller, what makes the olive such a fascinating and productive and important part of our world? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking the olive, and we're talking olive oil, and we're talking with Tom Mueller, author of Extra Virginity, and you. Please do stay tuned, because we will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio. Well, imagine going way back when, and to those people who were wandering around hunting and gathering, and all of a sudden they decided, well, what the heck, let's take a few grains from these wild grasses and grind them up and make some bread, and let's grind some of these olives up and make some oil, and there you go. The beginning of human civilization, pretty much the way of it, and as far as I can see, that's about how it happened. But what is it about that olive that makes it so special? We'll ask Tom Mueller, who is the author of Extra Virginity. What is it in the olive that makes it such a special? It makes it so much different than the rest of the oils that we have today.
Well, it's the only commercially important oil that's made from a fruit rather than from a seed. And what that means is, with seeds, you can take a pretty low-grade seed and make industrially acceptable oil because you're going to refine it anyway. Whereas with good olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, which we said doesn't go through a refining process, you're taking fresh fruit and you're pressing it rapidly and taking care of it as if it were fruit juice, which in fact it is. So,
and thus has all of the food value and taste and aroma and all the character and all the rest of the things as well. That's real food, right?
That's exactly right. It has all the aromatics, and it has all the health properties. And in fact, the 2% of the olive oil, there's 98% that's fatty acid profile. So oleic acid and the fat, the lipids. And then the 2%, which is a mysterious cocktail of very, very, very high-quality medicines, if you will, that science is only just beginning to understand. This is the core of the Mediterranean diet, and that 2% is what goes away when you have bad olives and you treat it badly and you refine it. So that's you're really losing the key to the health properties of of the oil when you refine it. But to come back to your question, why is this such a special food, and why has it always been the center of civilization? I think, first of all, it offers sustenance, but also, as we said, fuel, a skin lotion, a wide, wide range, a way of making cloth. All, and of course, the
it
the
has it has as many uses as cannabis.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, well, yes, except for the happy factor. I don't think olive oil has yet been found that can make you smile quite as much. But and ultimately, it grows in the desert. It grows for thousands of years. I mean, I've seen olive trees that people claim are 2,000 years old. That's kind of a miracle, that you could get all of that from one tree. And in harsh conditions, it's no wonder that it has become a symbol in the three great religions of the Mediterranean, the three monotheistic religions of the Mediterranean, as a symbol of prosperity, hardiness, and bounty.
Amen to that. So let's go to and contrast this olive oil, this wonderful fruit that we can squeeze and get the oils out of. Let's contrast that with the oils we get out of seeds, which are predominant around this country, at least.
Well, as we've said, they go through almost invariably. There are expeller pressed, but typically they're extracted with hexane or another industrial solvent.
Which means you soak the seeds in solvent and solvent, and the solvent picks up the oils.
Exactly. We see with olives, as being a fruit, there's a lot of water in there, and it's possible with physical means to actually coax the oil out. But with that, with seeds, there's no water to speak of, and you really need something pretty aggressive, either an enormously, enormously powerful press, which has only been really pioneered recently and is very expensive, or good old-fashioned hexane or a solvent that dissolves, the cell membranes and gets the oil out. So once you have this, it's inedible. I mean, it's quite often with such strong bad flavors that you really need to refine it. So all major seed oils and vegetable oils, except for olive oil, are refined, which of course just resets the clock. I mean, you get rid of the bad stuff, but you get rid of a lot of the good stuff too. And what you're left with is a pretty bland, quite often transparent liquid fat. And what we need to do in people's minds is distinguish that from extra virgin olive oil, which is a very, very tasty and very nutritious fruit juice. Although, if you go to the supermarket, guess where you find the olive oil? Right there next to the canola and sunflower seed oil and everything else. So it's hard to make that leap.
It should probably be next to the wine or something.
Yeah, well, it's tricky to say. Wine has some real similarities to olive oil, but one major difference, and that is typically wines get better with age and olive oil gets worse. So, I mean, there's no olive oil in the world that's going to get any better with age. It's the clock's ticking and it's degrading. Some oils last for 2 years and they're still pretty darn good, and others are off after 6 months. So I would actually say that maybe the fresh produce section or the cheeses or flour, somewhere where it's cool.
Somewhere there's real food.
Yeah, I have nothing against wine, mind you, but people have to get a message, and shopkeepers have to get a message. I mean, this is another thing. It's a big educational. Can't count the number of times I've walked by a shop and seen some really nice looking extra virgin olive oil sitting in the window in the sun. And would you treat your orange juice or your pineapple juice or your pomegranate juice that way? No, you wouldn't. And yet olive oil is treated that way.
Should olive oil be kept in dark glass and kept refrigerated?
Not necessarily refrigerated, but certainly in dark glass. So light, heat, and oxygen are the three enemies of olive oil, like other fruit juices. So you need to keep it in dark glass or in a box. I mean, if you want to have your clear glass bottle to show off the pretty oil, you cover it. And it doesn't need to be refrigerated, but in a cool place. And well away from the stove, which is where I often see people keep their bottle of olive oil, right next to the stove. And
guilty as charged.
Well, it happens. You want to use it, and you want to keep it in mind, but at the same time, if it's getting heated up, it's just going to go off faster.
There it is.
And then oxygen. You really do need to keep it tightly corked, but also get smaller bottles, perhaps, depending on how much you use. And not leave all that air headspace at the top of the oil.
Good enough. Well, here we have an oil that does just about everything for everybody, and thus, was one of the probably two crops that really form the base for our the food civilization's food chain. You have the grains from wild grasses, you have the olives from wild trees. You domesticate both, and pretty soon you have enough to start a civilization. And civilization proceeds along until World War II, and then there's this guy, the Ansel Keys shows up in the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Ansel Keys and how he really introduced the rest of the world to the olive and to the Mediterranean diet.
He was a remarkable man and a remarkable scientist, and he basically noticed that while much of America was going through a period of enormous prosperity and enormous good eating, quote-unquote good eating, and people were getting plenty to eat, they were having a higher incidence of heart disease than folks around the Mediterranean who had just gone through World War II and were living on a pretty slim diet. And then he started, so he went to various places in the Mediterranean, Crete and southern Italy and Yugoslavia. He traveled around quite a bit.
The village of Krista?
Yeah, that's right. And a place down in Calabria, I believe, down way deep in the boot where, you know, he found and began to codify what it was that people were eating around this Mediterranean place.
Okay, you're going to have to hold that. We're going to have to take a quick break. But when we come back, let's take the folks to that little village that Ansel Keys found and describe how they lived and what Ansel Keys observed about the eating of olive oil and the preservation of our bodies. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here today. We're talking about the olive and the oil from the olive. And we're talking with Tom Mueller, author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and Scandalous World of Olive Oil. And we're talking with you. If you'd like to talk with Tom, pick up your phones today. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back on The Food Chain. Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about a little village in southern Italy, down there in the boot of, I believe the name was Krista, in which a Minnesota epidemiologist after World War II went down and had a look at all of the people and their lifestyle. What did he find, Tom Mueller?
Well, he discovered a completely different model of eating and of living based on large quantities of green vegetables, fish, a number of other whole grains, and, of course, our favorite of all, olive oil, which really tied all things together. And he discovered people who had a very low incidence of coronary heart disease, despite the fact they'd just gone through the rigors of World War II. And back home in America, the land of beer and butter, as opposed to wine and olive oil, people in Ansel Keys's experience and in his studies were suffering heart disease far more. And that's really what got his attention.
In spite of being what, drenched in what, 50 liters of olive oil a year, the average consumption?
Well, yeah, it really depends on the micro regions and the different food habits of a people. But I've been in a place where it was 100. In Crete, there was 100 liters a year per person consumption. So it's
wow.
A quite stunning thing. I didn't actually have the fortune to meet Dr. Keys, but I did speak with one of his close collaborators in the writing up of the Seven Country Study, which is sort of the basis of the Mediterranean diet, Henry Blackburn at the University of Michigan, and he remembers being absolutely dazzled by the amount of oil people dumped all over their food, and by the way in which they would, you know, a farmer would take a little jigger of olive oil as a drink before going off to the fields in the morning, really medicinal as well as delicious.
So it was kind of like literally drenched in olive oil, and yet with no coronary heart disease, so thus the Mediterranean diet. And, of course, once the Mediterranean diet came out, holy smokes, the whole world wanted to get in on it, and thus the industry goes bonkers. Before we get to that part of the story, let's quickly pick up Craig, who's tuning in. And hello, Craig, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Michael.
Welcome aboard.
Hey, good guest and good subject. I have a few questions. Maybe he can run through them fast with the answers, but I told Nikki my first question is about what fascinates me is the age of these olive trees. And for a fruit-bearing tree, I mean, you read where they could last up to
2,000 years.
2,000, 3,000 years, and it dwarfs maybe any other, the next longest bearing fruit tree out there. And has anybody ever investigated or attempted? I mean, does anybody have any kind of answer of how and why they've
Well, that's a great question. What do
and
you
I have some other questions.
Okay, go ahead, Tom. Why does this tree live to be 2,000 years old?
It's still an open question, right up there with the bristlecone pine and the sequoia. I think it's at number three position. It's still an open question how exactly this happens. I mean, it's obviously very, very suited to desert climates and able to regrow. If you chop an olive tree off right at the ground level, it'll shoot back with green shoots next season and start again. And that is material of the same tree. But exactly why this one fruit tree has such a long life while others don't, I'm not sure. I'm going to be speaking soon with scientists, Israeli scientists in the Negev Desert, who are doing research on that particular question. I hope to have an answer for you soon.
Okay, go ahead, Craig.
Okay, thanks. I'm holding this bottle of olive oil. It has the extra virgin, the first cold press, but it also has the kosher label. Is there anything, you know, that it looks good on it, but does that add to the goodness of this olive oil, the kosher?
No, it just means that it's been certified, presumably certified, as kosher by the appropriate authorities. Unfortunately, olive labels are just not being policed. Now, I can't tell you the extent to which kosher is policed, but I can tell you that all of the other words that you just mentioned, plus USDA, organic, plus everything else, is just not being policed. So, unfortunately, you can't believe what you read on the labels.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
there you go.
This is a Greek olive oil. It says they've been making here on a label for 4,000 years, Greece, but that leads to my next question. What is your favorite olive oil, and what's your favorite country where olive oil comes from?
I'll tell you, that's a tricky one. It's a bit like saying, what's your favorite wine? And it really depends on, because there are about 700 different types of olives, and those 700 different types produce materially, quite often drastically different oils. And each of those types of olive grown in different places can produce a vastly different product as well. So you have several thousand different options there. I live in Liguria in northwestern Italy, and they make an oil with a Tagliasca olive, which is actually not very good. They pick it very, very ripe and don't mill it particularly well, and it gets soft and kind of goes off pretty quickly. But I've had a Tagliasca olive up in Winters, California, which is from the same tree, you know, the same roots, the same genetic stock and everything else. So picked early and crushed properly, it makes an absolutely magnificent oil. Another favorite of mine is Koroneiki, which is originally from Greece, but some of the best Koroneiki I've ever had was in Australia. And of course, the famous Tuscan blends are awfully good, the Licino, Moraiolo, Frantoio, Maurino, and those are delicious in Tuscany. I'm assuming it's good stuff, but they can be made very, very well in Chile.
So take that, Craig.
Yeah.
Good answers there, right?
Any other questions?
Yeah, I do.
We're going to have to hold them, Craig. So I'm going to finish off here a little bit and try at the end of the program. I'd like to go back to the original supposition here. We have this incredibly popular oil that's brought to the attention of the Western world, and all of a sudden the demand for olive oil goes bonkers. How on earth does the Mediterranean supply a worldwide demand for olive oil, for the good stuff?
Frankly, right now what we have is a situation in which a great number of different products, very, very good and very bad, are all sold under the same label. What we need is for the label to accurately reflect the contents. There's nothing wrong with refined olive oil. It just has to say so on the label. There's nothing particularly wrong, you know, with lampante oil if you're going to use it for your lamp. It just has to say so on the label. So long as all these different grades are sold on the same label, there's not going to be a price differentiation either. And I know, thousands of growers around the Mediterranean, but also in various other parts of the world where olives are grown, who could easily make very, very good extra virgin olive oil, I won't say from one day to the next, but from one season to the next. They're just not getting paid the price premium to do the extra work, which is substantial, to make the good stuff.
Is there no Appellation Control A as there is for wine?
There are. They call them DOC, or basically the Guarantee of Origin groups. and ICG, which is a slightly less restrictive grouping as well. They exist, but frankly, they're in such small quantities, and they have these bizarre little geographic labels. I think they cause more confusion than good. I mean, they do actually, Gary, if you see a DOC label, a DOP, I'm sorry, label on olive oil, from the EU, it gives you an added guarantee that this is going to be better, because they do run it through a taste panel. They do have higher standards. But so often, I mean, this is really a drop in the bucket, and few people understand what that seal means.
Okay, and when we come back from this quick break, we're going to figure out how on earth we can find that real extra virgin olive oil with Tom Mueller, author of Extra Virginity, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Please do stay tuned. Well, folks, extra virgin is olive oil that has been pressed fresh from fresh olives. It's the fruit of the olive, so to speak. Pressed out of the olive by hand or by machine, but without chemicals or biological processes. It is fresh, it is clean, and best of all, it is full of life. And so the world has gone bonkers for extra virgin. But how on earth do we actually find extra virgin in a world of the fake, the floozy, or the fraud? And that's the question we have on the table today for Tom Mueller, author of Extra Virginity. Tom, another question I'd like to ask is, given the demand for extra virgin olive oil, how does the industry industrialize its processes, from literally going from grinding olives in stone to an industrial model that can supply the world demand? Is it possible?
Well, it is possible. And in fact, the machinery that's being used to make the bad oil right now could easily be used to make good oil. It starts with the harvest, getting the fruit off the trees at the right time when they're just on the turn or maybe even a little greener, rather than what happens now, which is letting gravity do the work and letting them hit the ground and sit around for 2 or 3 months.
So that means picking them or shaking them off a tree.
Yes,
right?
Sir. And that means cost, because mm-hmm. it's expensive to harvest those olives. It's expensive anywhere in the world, but it's particularly expensive in hilly country, in say Sonoma or in Tuscany, where land prices are high, labor costs are very high, and you have to do everything pretty much by hand. You can't get the tractors in there. So this is a very expensive process. Quite often harvest is 50% of your cost.
Is China growing extra virgin olive oil?
They are growing very, very small amounts of it, and I can't speak for sure whether it's actually extra virgin at this point, but they are starting to import a greater and greater amount from outside, and they're beginning to be more vigilant, too. Recently, they halted certain shipments of olive oil from Italy when there was a big, perhaps scandalous, overly scandalous news report in the Italian newspapers about some bad oil. So the Chinese authorities are beginning to take notice of this issue.
In Extra Virginity, the remark was made that the United States is the best place to sell bad oil. Why is that?
Well, you have 300 million consumers and a rapidly growing demand for olive oil. I mean, we're now the third largest consumer behind Spain and Italy in the world. We just passed Greece, and growing at 10% a year. At the same time, as people are getting a real yen for good olive oil, there are no official checks by the authorities as to what goes in the bottle. So it's a great place, a growth market, lots of demand, and no controls.
And
if you want to get up the funny business.
And probably the best thing of all is naive consumers.
That's true. That's true. In the long term, that's actually going to be very much in our favor. It's going to be a real advantage. But in the short term, you can sell folks anything and tell them it's extra virgin. Very soon, people are going to start waking up. The first time they have a first taste, I remember my first taste of a good oil, and my first reaction was, wow, what's this? And my second reaction was, what is it that those folks have been selling me until now? And, there's an immediate sense of, I've been had, and that is not something that appeals to any consumer, and I think America's right up there at the top of that list. Go ahead.
Well, how do we become knowledgeable consumers for starting from scratch? Starting from never probably having smelled what real extra virgin olive oil smells like or tastes like. How would we know the real deal?
That's a very good question. Well, first of all, you start off, if you can, seeing where olives are grown, having a look at the fruit rather than just, you know, it comes in an olive oil bottle in the supermarket, and going to a mill. And here in California, you have the luxury of going to a mill. If you live elsewhere, it might be tougher. And seeing how those olives are turned into oil and smelling that wonderful smell as oil is still warm and it really kind of gets into your hair. And it's a magical, peppery sort of experience just to be in a mill, and you taste it coming out of the centrifuge, and it's pretty good. If you don't have the luxury to go to a mill, find a store where you can taste before you buy. And there is a growing number of specialty stores selling excellent olive oil with knowledgeable people who can walk you through it a little bit and explain that there are 700 different kinds of olives and the different, you know, the full-bodied and more mild flavor profiles, how you use them in different foods. But the key thing is, yeah, to find a place where you can trust the person, since you can't trust the label, trust the person to have selected good oils for you to taste from.
We always talk here on the food chain about finding food with its farmer's face on it. It's kind of exactly what you're saying, right? You have to find somebody that you can actually trust and look into their eyes and is this real or is this fake?
Absolutely, and cut out all of the middlemen who have been the biggest part of this problem. You know, so many of these oil traders and dealers, and there's a huge long chain of them between the grove and the consumer. Some of these people have never seen an olive tree, and they have never looked the consumer in the eye, and they're really not accountable. So if you can find the person who has made this oil or the person who really vouches for it, you know, they've done the long yards and checked the mill and everything, then you're in a much better position to get good oil.
How do we spot a fake?
Well, you can go back to the definition of olive oil, and that is that of extra virgin olive oil. That is, it has to taste or remind you of fresh fruit. It has to have a fruitiness, a pungency to it. Well, the law says it has to remind you of fresh olives. The common wisdom is, and trial and error has shown, that if it's bitter and pungent, it's also more likely to be the real thing. If it's completely flat and if it's completely characterless, it was at the very best made with bad olives, and at the very worst, it isn't olives at all. Bitterness and pungency are an acquired taste. I mean, they're not something that people always resonate with immediately. But you have to think those things mean the oil is healthy. Those are direct indicators of medicinal value in the oil.
So the best thing is to look for life.
That's right. Yeah, liquid, I think full of life is what you said is absolutely on the money. This is liquid health.
Okay, when we get back, we're going to ask Tom where to go and how to do it with Food Chain. Do stay tuned. Well, a few minutes left and so much left to talk about. Tom Mueller, author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and Scandalous World of Olive Oil. Will it be possible for us to develop an industry by which we can provide ourselves with extra virgin olive oil? Or will we always rely on getting it from the Mediterranean, for example?
Oh, no. There are many, many first-rate production areas outside of the Mediterranean. I want to say I've lived in the Mediterranean for the better part of 20 years. I think it's a marvelous place, and they make some of the best oils in the world. But they don't have a monopoly on quality. Here in California, there are some fabulous, fabulous producers. In Chile and Argentina, I've had some terrific oils. In Australia, some of the best oils in the world are made, and the most serious approach to quality in terms of legislation. New Zealand, South Africa, you can follow the Mediterranean climate band around the world, and right across that band, there are people in Georgia making olive oil now, and it's pretty darn good. So it's by no means locked in to the Mediterranean to supply our oil.
So we have the climate, but what about the rest of the inputs required for production? And I'm thinking most particularly of land costs and labor costs and costs. And
right.
We're the high price spread here in the United States.
That's right. That's right. Basically what we have to do is reflect the real costs of growers in every part of the world, and get them properly compensated for those costs. I mean, right now with the dumbed down level of extra virgin and everything and its brother being put into the bottle, people just aren't getting the premium they deserve. Now, if you can make a super special oil, and again, the options are endless. You can make a very, very special, very unique oil in a particular high mountain area in in Northern California or in Chile, and it costs you a lot to make, but you can make an argument that that's a really special oil. I mean, you can look at wines and the differentiation of wines. There are wines that go for hundreds of dollars a bottle because something is special about them. Mm-hmm. That's the same situation in olive oil, exactly the same.
So it kind of goes back to Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't. If you mm-hmm. if you find a bottle of extra virgin olive oil, and it's has beautiful pictures of colorful pictures of Italian flags on it, and it's really cheap, chances are it isn't, right?
Run fast the other way, yeah. If you start doing the global calculation of what's cheap, buying something that is very, very low cost but very low quality, and then paying the medical bills at the end that you have to do because of what you've eaten, that's extremely expensive food.
So where do you see the world of olive oil going here? We have a minute left.
I think that the U.S. market, the U.S. consumer, is really waking up to what olive oil means, extra virgin olive oil and all of its different varieties, why they should be eating it for health and for culinary reasons. And I think they're beginning to say, I want some early growth Sajasca, I want some late growth this. They're beginning to do what they've done in wine and coffee and designer chocolate and sea salt and microbrewery beer, and be discerning and pay for the excellence. And I think that's really going to be a major force, not only in the New World, but also in the Mediterranean. Mediterranean growers are applauding this move. They can't wait to be paid the fair price for excellence because they're perfectly capable of producing it.
Well, there you go, folks. I guess when it gets right down to it, we all want the extra virginity. And we're just going to have to come to grips that if we really want it, then we should have to pay for it. And it's probably not that cheap, not that expensive at all when it gets right down to the fact that cheap food really isn't cheap at all. I want to thank Tom Mueller, author of Extra Virginity, The Sublime and Scandalous World of Olive Oil. A great read. Pick it up. And thank all you out there for tuning in the food chain. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.